of Houston Sports Radio, the preeminent NFL draft analyst. You found The Bench on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's John Granato and Lance Zierlein.
Welcome back here on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Being joined right now by Seth Walder, ESPN Sports Analytics writer. And follow him on Twitter, at Seth Walder, W-A-L-D-E-R. And you're going to see all the analytics stuff that you could possibly want. Just put out a list, as a matter of fact, of all the people in the NFL, in the analytics departments. And holy cow. Seth, welcome to the show. How are you?
I'm doing great. How are you guys?
Doing great. So where is you? This list that you just put out?
It shocks you, doesn't it?
It's unbelievable. See, what's funny the is, number of people in analytics right now in football.
Yeah.
Seth, where was this list, let's even say, 3 years ago? How many more people are on the list of NFL analytics than they were 3 years ago?
Ooh, that's a great question. I should know the answer. I feel like I started doing this list 2 years ago, almost probably exactly 2 years ago, and I would guess it's about a 40% increase since then. That's a ballpark, but it's substantial. I mean, it's definitely been growing quickly.
Have you noticed that? So, you know, I've got friends in the league, and I do some different things with NFL teams. And one of the things that I think has been really overplayed, really even over the last 5 years, but for sure over the last 3 years, I think there's some leftover tweets that people have about, you know, NFL and the analytics. And I know Pro Football Focus has brought it into view a little more quickly to the public. But I think the perception that the NFL doesn't value analytics, anyone who says that is just that narrative is dead to me.
I think that's right. Like, this is a rapidly changing thing. So I agree with you. Like, where we were 5 years ago or 10 years ago is very different than where we are today. Mm-hmm. I do think that there's a wide variety of how teams treat analytics. So, like, the range from, like, the Browns or Eagles to teams at the bottom, like the Titans, who only just a year ago made their first full-time analytics hire. I do think that there's a pretty big range in those teams. But certainly, like, certainly teams are using quantitative analysis to inform decision making. There is, to me, I think, if we're comparing to baseball or basketball, the NFL is still behind, but it's made a lot of great strides in that area. Agreed.
What now? The simplistic thing is, okay, when do I go for it on fourth down? First down passing, all stuff like that. Mm-hmm. How detailed are teams getting, like giving a certain guy the ball in certain situations or stuff like that? Are they getting into baseball analytics where a pitcher player matchup and stuff of that nature?
Basketball too.
Where they touch the ball. Right, yeah. Absolutely. How detailed are they getting right now in football?
I think it depends, but I think that's a really good question. So you have the fourth down stuff, like you said, and I think the teams are getting quite detailed. Like, we heard Brandon Staley talk about how in their model they're putting in specific inputs related to that game, right? Which makes sense, right? You want to, if that team is, maybe they're particularly, your opponent is good against stopping the run, well, that matters quite a bit if you're trying to go for it on fourth and one. I think when it comes to the matchup, like you say, like regular play matchup questions, right? Like, how is my receiver going to do against this corner on in-breaking routes? That's the kind of stuff that teams are going to be, are much more, that's the hidden part, right? That's the part that's not going to make its way out to us, because that's the more cutting edge stuff. That's where they're using the player tracking data to build out those insights. And I think that, like, I see it as an iceberg, basically. The fourth down stuff, that's like the tip of the iceberg. We can see it. And then there's all this other stuff underneath the surface the teams are doing to, inform their decision-making, inform their play calling. That is much harder for us to see, but definitely a lot of teams are using data analysis to inform those choices.
Seth, one of the things that I find interesting, even at your organization, is – so I think ESPN's programming, you don't have to comment on this, but ESPN's television programming as really, frankly, with most mainstream programming, plays to the lowest common denominator, basic, simple narratives. But it is interesting, though, that even inside of that, you guys are with the more cutting-edge analytics stuff, and all of these different entities now want to have their own analytics director, because there is an understanding that there are plenty of fans out there who do want smarter content, who do want to understand the probabilities and the math behind, and frankly, the biggest advantages that teams have. How do you think that these media entities are reckoning with lowest common denominator programming, but still taking care of the growing segment of people who really want smarter content?
I think that, you know, my old boss, Ben Alomar, used to be the director of analytics at ESPN. The way he put it is, teams are using data analysis to inform their decision-making. And so if we want to explain why teams are making the choices that they are, then we need to be doing that as well. And so to me, if we want to communicate to fans and explain to them why the Vikings would trade down with the Lions from 12 to 32 and why that deal, which was unorthodox, might make sense, then we need to have done that kind of analysis on our own so that we can make that explanation. And I also think that we can give our viewers credit. Like, they are, you know, they are smart and they can understand, you know, a lot of advanced, you know, football or other sport concepts. And I do think that we've had a lot of success in this area. Like, to me, one of our biggest successes with player tracking data has been our win rates, our pass block win rate and pass rush win rate. Those are stats that did not exist a couple of years ago, and now I'm, you know, it makes me so happy, warms my heart when there's like a big offensive line free agent signing, and without having done anything, you know, I can go to the ESPN.com story and I know that oh, it'll say, yeah, fifth among tackles in pass block win rate last year, and I think that it's been able to catch on, and I hope at least the fans find it informing to have some data behind line play.
I want to ask a quick question of Seth Walder, who is our guest right now. Seth, are you the director of analytics for ESPN? What's your official title with ESPN?
I'm a sports analytics writer.
Okay, you're the writer. You're one of the writers there. You write beyond just the NFL. Do you do basketball and baseball as well?
I do college football as well, and I dabble in college basketball when we get to like March.
Okay, here's a question I have for you. One of the things that is interesting to me is this is it's not an NBA question, but it's the kind of the concept. We had Daryl Morey here, and you, of course, will know who Daryl Morey is.
Yeah.
Daryl Morey used to really get over on people with trades when he was with Houston, and then lately it seems like things have really changed. I really wonder if the way that analytics is being used now in terms of understanding value of draft picks, value of contracts, value of age and when players have breakout seasons, if that is really normalizing the field amongst all teams and other sports, because they're all starting to see things through a very similar analytics lens. Do you think that's happening right now in the sports you cover at least?
Yes. I think that basically over time, the edge that you gain from the quantitative analysis, it shrinks because everyone else is sort of catching up. And so, like, to your point, when the Rockets were doing things that other teams weren't doing, they might have had a really great strong edge. Now that kind of knowledge is all around. And, you know, in baseball, you're working super hard for tiny edges. But to me, the lesson in that is if you are an NFL team, you want to be first. You want to be the team that has developed a better measure of cornerback play, right? Something that's really hard to measure quantitatively before everyone else does, because that means that you get a few years when you have this advantage that everybody else doesn't have. It's not going to last forever, but you can grab it now. If you don't grab it now, you're not going to get it.
Seth Walder with us here on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. ESPN just put out rankings of positions by people in the football world. Do you guys rank the players analytically, and how close are the football people with just their human eyes versus what you're looking at players analytically? How close are your lists?
I don't know that I don't have an exact list myself, but I do use our numbers to sort of like inform opinions, and I would, you know, happily make lists. And so what I think what happens is, by and large, they line up pretty well. But I think there are definitely times when there are players that jump out that I'm like, wow, really? So, like, a, you know, to me, like a guy like Grady Jarrett, who was ninth on the defensive tackles list, and to me is just been a clear-cut top three defensive tackle over the last several years. By our win rates, it's always been Aaron Donald, Chris Jones, Grady Jarrett. These guys are the best pass-rushing defensive tackles in the league by our numbers, and it's been so consistent. So I was really shocked to see him. Obviously, he's, you know, he's played a few years now, but to see a guy like him be that low on the list. Or like an A.J. Terrell, who was ninth also in the corner list. I mean, he put up incredible numbers last season. And I think, yeah, there's guys who maybe have a little bit longer track records, you can understand, but I was pretty shocked to see Terrell be all the way down below someone like Pat Surtain or a Denzel Ward. You know, Terrell was, I think, better than those guys last year. So there are definitely players that stand out to me. By and large, it matches up, but I think that's why it's interesting.
How close are we to you guys having war that analytically driven numbers about football players as baseball is?
I would say medium close. Like, not that, you know, I credit that PFF, they do have a war metric themselves. It's something that we feel like we have a decent way to go to quantifying some other positions, like corners, like I mentioned, safeties, off-ball linebackers. We have metrics to get at some of the ways that they produce, but to determine a player's entire value, I don't think we're quite there yet, personally, at least like from where we are. But I think it would be, but obviously you're sort of striving to get there. But football is much more complicated when it comes to that, because mm-hmm. you have these sort of wide positional differences in players, and also like the interaction of players, right? Like I think like if Davante Adams is a 3 and Aaron Rodgers is a 5, in baseball you can put them together and say they're an 8. I'm not sure that in football it's quite the same. You put them together in football, it might be a 12, but without each other, because you have this great quarterback, great receiver, they might be worth more than the sum of their parts. You could say the same about an offensive line, where maybe it's just the weak link that matters on the offensive line. So a really good tackle is good, but a really terrible tackle is more bad than the good tackle is good, if that makes sense. You have these always complicated wrinkles within football that I think you have to sort out.
Yeah, I think it's one of the difficulties to me, and I use, with film study, I use data also. I try to combine the two in my player evaluations. But it is tricky, I think, because I don't think football can be – it's not the same as basketball. It's not the same as baseball, but where you have – especially baseball, where you have – one-on-one, you were looking for a successful outcome every time on every pitch and every swing and every, you know, but in football, there are some nuances to play calling. There are some nuances to your amount of dependence upon a play caller or another player for you to have a successful play. Not necessarily an offensive line, defensive line. I get what you're saying there. Although my dad, who is a longtime NFL line coach, they do get a little fired up about people making judgments on success and a lack of success when you don't know, you know, some of what the rules are for, and you're going to run into that at all times. But I'm okay with a plus minus of mistakes being made when you do help to capture, you know, the general success of a player, which I do think is happening with analytics right now in the NFL.
Yeah, totally. I mean, it's absolutely true that, you know, you don't know the play call, you don't know the exact scheme in any given play. I think the counters to that are always, well, neither does, you know, another team, right? Like if I work for the Falcons and we're drafting a free agent who plays for the Raiders, and you're trying to figure out how good is this player we want to potentially sign,
right?
You don't have their play call on every play, so you're still judging them. And then the other thing is, but still fair, like a still fair, I think, critique. The thing we gain, I think, is consistency and objectivity. Like no matter what the when we run like our pass block win rate, it's judging every play the exact same, and it's never biased toward a player. Like Aaron Donald finishes first in defensive tackle pass rush win rate, you know, every single year. The model doesn't know who Aaron Donald is. It just knows that this person, 99, consistently is beating its blocker more than anybody else, but it doesn't go into a play thinking, oh yeah, he's probably gonna eat up this guard. He doesn't know that, and so we get that same play graded the same way for every play in the season, and that is, I think, a nice advantage.
Seth Walder, ESPN at Seth Walder on Twitter. Just followed him to get all of his information. That'll be good stuff, especially come fantasy time, I would think. Right, Seth? Am I right about
yeah,
that?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, we do. Yeah, we do some fantasy and betting stuff too. Absolutely.
You're gonna help me out fantasy wise. I appreciate it. I appreciate it. Seth Walder, ESPN, right here on ESPN 97.5. Thanks, Seth. We appreciate your time.
Thank you, guys.
All right, Seth Walder, analytics writer for ESPN. The Morley Law Firm, they're here for you. If you're looking for any help, whatever it is that you need help with, whatever problem that you have, because you don't need a lawyer usually unless you have a problem, okay? Now, you may want to do wills or, and then, you know what, that's great. There may be some stuff. There may be some stuff that you want to take care of real estate-wise or whatever, and that's not a problem. But there's a lot of problems out there, okay? If the police are looking into you, investigating you, if the police have, if there are any charges, God forbid, there are charges against you, well, you need a lawyer. And even if you've done it, if you didn't do it, whatever the case may be, you need representation. You need expertise. And you've got that expertise at the Morley Law Firm. They're great. They've got the unbelievable experience. And they do just about everything. Everything. It's unbelievable, the wide range, including se habla español. Okay? If you've got immigration problems or you have workers that have immigration problems, you want to keep them around. Well, they're here for you. All you got to do is go to Morley Law, MorleyLaw.com. Make the call, Morley Law, 713-839-9955. 713-839-9955. They're here for you no matter what the situation is. Give them a call. Let them hear your case and let them hear if they can help you. Morley Law, MorleyLaw.com.
ESPN 97.5. Godfather of Houston sports radio, the preeminent NFL draft analyst. You found The Bench on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's John Granato and Lance Zierlein.
How do you feel about Tiger double bogey and one, Lance?
Not good. I want Tiger to make the cut.
I know, right? We want Tiger around on the weekend.
He plunked into the water on his second shot.
What about the road hole in Xander Schauffele putting off the road through the sand and onto the green?
That was an unbelievable shot.
That was unbelievable. Unbelievable. Yeah, that's just that's just awesome. 713-780-3776. I mean, if you're not watching this, then I just think you're stupid. That's all. I mean, I don't want to say you're stupid per se, but whatever.
You see Zach Wilson, by the way, he posted on Instagram for the first time. Took the boys to Gozer Ranch Club in Idaho before camp. Poor cell service. What'd I miss?
That's good stuff.
Garrett Wilson, his new wide receiver, just put laugh cry emoji, goat. Because everyone, Mike Carter, running back, says legendary.
Oh, God. Slow down. Stop.
This is going to be one of the... In a weird way, this is a different time. Well,
did you see what his mom said?
No.
Can people please stop calling my friends? She was serious, though.
Yeah.
She's like, hey, everybody, stop calling my friends.
Zach Wilson, do you understand that a quarterback from BYU supposedly got with one of his mom's friends? After his mom got some attention on draft day, by the way, when he was drafted, do you understand that this just elevated across his own locker room, just elevated his cool? That's all it did.
Oh, yeah.
That's all it did. Like, well, you had sex with a woman 25 years older than you? Oh, yeah. Now, let's see if it's still cool when Tom Brady's doing it. And the word gets out that Tom Brady was with somebody who was 72. Okay?
Well,
is that going to be?
No,
how old is he? 42, 67. Is Tom Brady going to be considered cool if he slept with one of his mom's friends?
That's a big hit to your cool. It's not like Tom Brady's cool already.
Yeah, he is very cool.
No, Tom Brady's not cool.
Tom Brady's exceptionally cool.
No.
You mean with the Brazilian supermodel? He's not cool?
Brazilian supermodel?
Giselle, isn't she the one that's...
She's not Brazilian. Isn't she German?
Oh, wait. I'm thinking of the other one he was with.
Yeah,
who's
no.
Who's the other one?
Bridget Moynihan? No.
No, 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 no. Who's the other one? The Brazilian.
That's... No. That's... what's her Giselle's, name? Lima.
No, I'm... Yeah, I was right. She is a Brazilian model.
Giselle is Brazilian?
Yeah, and her name
Bunchen?
Is Bunchen. Yeah. You're well, welcome.
Well, she's got German background.
You're welcome.
No.
She was born in Rio Grande, Brazil. She was born in Rio Grande
German.
De Sul, Brazil.
She's German. That's like saying, yeah, I was.
Her parents are Vania Nonnenmacher and Valdir Bunchen. Yeah, it's.
Yeah.
The family.
I didn't know
the
she
blood
was
feels German, but she's technically considered Brazilian, John.
Is she?
Yeah.
Forget about it.
She's technically...
Well, I think she's overrated anyway, so that's just me, though.
Overrated?
Overrated.
Who are you to call her overrated? She's worth billions.
Billions. But yeah, so what? A lot of people are worth billions that are
and
overrated.
She's overrated how? In what way?
I don't think she's
in
that fine.
In what way is this supermodel overrated?
I don't think she's that fine. That's just me. I thought he made a mistake. Bridget Moynihan, hotter.
So she's not pretty.
She's pretty, but
you just, you,
Bridget
this is,
Moynihan,
this
hotter.
All gets back to the butt thing with you. I already know. I'm not even going to bring it up. I already know it's not the. Okay. I already know.
Let's call Dell and see where he is on this.
I can't call Dell. Dell's the same way you are. Your okay. First word that comes out is pancake, and I can't pay attention to either of you over this.
Huh.
But is it cool when if you? So it's cool when you hit your mom's friend at 25 years old.
Yes,
and that includes all quarterbacks.
Yes, it's all. It's cool.
Yes. Okay, so I want. So if Drew Brees. So Drew Brees' mom, if he got with Drew Brees' mom's friend, is that still cool?
With Drew Brees? No, Drew, that's a little older, okay?
Why? When is the cool level, when is it no longer cool? I'm asking.
When
quarterback
when,
cannot sleep with their mom's friend and it's no longer cool?
When she
68-year-old
hits...
woman can't be cool for Drew Brees? You can't elevate him with his teammates?
That doesn't elevate...
You the GOAT! You the GOAT!
That doesn't elevate you, okay?
No. Mitchell Trubisky with his mom's friend, still okay, right?
Yeah, I don't know what's.
I can't say Deshaun Watson, his mom's friend. We don't even want to go there with any of that.
No.
Jay Cutler. If Jay Cutler had done that, not now, but what about when he was in Denver?
I'm not even sure about Jay Cutler's wife hitting on her.
What about then?
What?
Okay, Davis Mills. So
I don't know what Davis Mills' mom's friends look like.
Why isn't it cool? You don't know what Zach Wilson's mom's friend looked like.
Well,
there's no picture of her either.
No, but
just say it. Is it cool or not? You'll still get your pizzas. They'll still give you free stuff.
It depends on how old she is.
Well, now there's.
Well, now she
well,
could
now
be a younger
rules?
Friend of. Yes, there's absolutely rules.
Davis Mills is as young as him. He was in the same draft class. You have to say if Davis Mills it came out that he had done things with his mom's friend, then Brandon Cooks has to say you the GOAT.
Well, yeah.
It's contractually obligated.
Well, because
Damian Pierce
again,
has to say
everybody's
legendary.
Everybody's assuming that her mom is hot. The mom's friends are hot because his mom is hot, right? But if it's Joe Namath's mom, no, she's old.
But he's in the same
dead.
Draft class. If you're with your mom's friend, I'm just saying. Why are we all of a sudden setting up these boundaries and rules? You never even saw the mom's friend either.
No,
you're
but I'm assuming she's hot because the
you're
mom's
making
hot.
Assumptions.
Yeah, now she's got to hang out with hot
now,
people. Now, a lot of hot moms ain't. They want to hang out with ugly so they look better.
Okay, so what am I now? What am I now Googling? What do you think I'm Googling right now?
Joe Namath's mom's. Joe Namath's mom.
Nope.
No,
I'm Googling Davis Mills' mom. I'm now Googling his mom.
See.
And I feel bad about this.
No, that's terrible.
I'll be honest with you.
The
I feel
kid,
bad about it.
The kid's just sitting there trying to win football games, and here you are Googling his mom to find out if she's got hot friends.
She's got athletic kids. I can tell you that. I Googled, and I'm looking. No pictures. But I'm on her site. I mean, I'm looking. But,
I know this. She probably got a long neck.
her son does. Her son does. But we're fans of her son.
Huh?
We're fans of her son. You know what she looks like? Somebody who's just trying to be a normal person.
Yeah, just
she's not like
I just want to be a mom.
Like Zach's mom got a little like extra. Oh, yeah. Zach's mom's a little extra.
Well,
like, she was happy at the time, at least, he was drafted by the Jets. I think Davis Mills' mom is just like, you know what? Can we now? She did say, "Let's go Braves" in the World Series against the Astros.
What? Oh, see,
one of her tweets.
Now she just lost all credibility. That's all. Davis Mills' mom.
But see, Davis Mills' mom is a good woman and a good person.
Yeah,
she's out here.
And she probably doesn't have friends who are going to sleep with Davis Mills. That's the problem.
That's not a problem. It's good. Keep it in your pants, ladies. Just because Davis Mills. Now, that's a third-round quarterback.
That's true.
It's not the second pick of the draft. I don't know what the difference is there.
Okay,
I'm just saying, did you know? I noticed. See, you changed your opinion. You thought Zach's the god. Zach Wilson the god. Whenever you first hear that story, I take the same quarterback out of the same draft class, but you don't keep that same energy.
No. Well, he's a third-round pick.
You think that's
with
what it is?
Neck. I'm not sure.
What about Kellen Mond and Kellen Mond's mom? That's hard to say fast. Kellen Mond and Kellen Mond's mom. What about who is the quarterback from Florida that threw the Dell says throws paper planes? The other quarterback that they had there who's just going to sink into oblivion with Tampa. What's his name? I got to look up
Kyle Trask.
Kyle Trask. What about Kyle Trask's mom?
I don't know. She's a third rounder. She's a Pearland mom. She's probably hot. I don't know.
I got to Google Kyle Trask's
mom. But he's a
mom.
Big guy now. See, that's the problem.
What?
He's a really big guy. Chances are mom's a little bigger. I don't know.
He's a quarterback.
He's a big guy.
He's 6'4".
Yeah,
guess you got a problem with his mom being 5'11"?
No, Zach Wilson ain't. Zach Wilson's a cute little guy. You know what? Because his mom.
Zach Wilson is a cute little guy. Hold on. Now, this is why having ADD is great. Because I can take us in these directions. His combine. I got to make sure this number's right. You're going to freak out a little bit here. How big do you think Zach Wilson is?
6'2", 212.
6'3", 210. He's not a little guy. He's got a little kid face. He's got a little kid face.
Yeah.
I'll give you that.
Kyle Trask looks like he's 40, choking down heaters.
Kyle Trask does not look like he's choking down heaters. And I want to stop. Listen, he does look like he looks a little bit like, this does not look
how
like.
How big
a,
is he?
Now, this doesn't look like a quarterback.
No,
anymore.
That does not look like a quarterback.
This looks like a center.
Yeah,
that's what I'm saying. Kyle Trask.
I can't trust his mom's friends.
And he's a ginger.
I can't trust his mom's friends to be hot.
He's a ginger. Yeah, let me see what his actual size.
We
got to
take a break.
He's 6'5", 236. Yeah. You may be onto something.
Oh, can't trust his mom's friends to be hot. All right.
So the Astros lost 7-1 yesterday.
That's all. Here's a new way. Here, how about this? All right, Kyle Trask looks like somebody who's going to dip, doesn't he? I mean, he does.
I mean, he could, yeah. The latest pictures, too,
Artisan Grange, okay? Listen, I love this stuff because this is healthier. Guys, I don't dip. You dip. I'm sure your girlfriend or your wife or even your friends are like, dude, that's gross. And, oh, by the way, it's not healthy. Stuff can happen to you when you dip. You put that same tobacco in that same place every day. And that's a recipe for disaster. Here's the deal. There's a new way to dip with hemp. All right. Hemp is pretty cool. I don't know if you heard. Hemp is pretty cool. It's 100% hemp flour in a hemp pouch. So you're dipping hemp, which is not dangerous. No tobacco, no nicotine. And it's got CBD in it. Okay. And there's all kinds of healthful benefits from CBD. Can't promise you that you're going to get healthy now. All of a sudden, your broken leg is going to be better or your knee problems are going to be better. But CBD does help health-wise, okay? It does stuff for you. And you are swallowing that as opposed to nicotine, as opposed to tobacco. You say you spit. Well, guess what? You're still swallowing a lot of it. And, oh, by the way, you're gross, too. That's gross. But there is a new way to dip. It's called DoBlend and Canstead. Go find out for yourself. You've got original flavors. You've got traditional tobacco flavors as well. You're looking for a new way to dip? 975dip.com, 975dip.com.
ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Real fun sports.
The
godfather of Houston sports radio, the preeminent NFL draft analyst. You found The Bench on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's John Granato and Lance Zierlein.
All right, welcome back here. Let's get back on track and talk Astros baseball with Thomas. He's been waiting. He wants to talk about his Houston Astros here on the radio. Hey, Thomas.
What's going on, fellas?
How you doing, man?
Man, long time listener. This is QB1 right here. So I've been listening to you guys, man. Congratulations on the 25. I moved out here, I think it was in 1998, man. So I thought, listening to you guys back then, it sounded like y'all had been on the radio for 100 years already.
remember when Thomas was in our... Were we at 6'10 at the first Christmas party where you took over?
Was he the all-time quarterback?
Yeah, he's the all-time quarterback. He's QB1, he calls himself.
Yeah.
I think we were already at 1560, I believe.
Yeah, but I've been listening to you guys, man, since 98, actually. I think it was 99. And I moved to Mississippi and moved back, believe it or not. I remember how stoked I was when I got iHeartRadio over there and I was able to listen to you guys before I moved back out here. But, man, I just want to say congratulations. And I know, like so many of the other listeners on the radio, man, right now, you guys have become a part of my life for the last 25, so I really appreciate it.
We appreciate it, man.
He's the best caller ever. No doubt.
So I've been home recovering from knee replacement. I wish I took Lance's advice on that QT kinetics or whatever. But, yeah, I've been home for the past 8, recovering from knee replacement. But I just want to holler at you boys. I go back to work next week, and I got to pay some bills, I guess, so I won't be able to listen every day like I've been able to for the last 8 weeks. But just wanted to throw a little bit of Astros talk at you. The pitching for the last few months, man, has been incredible. I don't think I've ever seen anything like it. You guys have been all over it. To me, it seems like every guy out there, almost, at least the starters, every single one of them seem like they're the same guy. You get like 95, 96, something nasty, nothing down the middle. Where we do get in trouble, like a guy like Javier that's so nasty, and you could see last night he was nasty. His ball was running all over the place. That's why he was striking guys out, but he was just a little bit off, just a little bit something off in his release, but the ball was moving all over the place and guys still couldn't hit it. Jose Altuve, are you guys talking about analytics? Real quick, I just want to throw this out there. Jose Altuve, for a couple of years, I remember when he first came in, Lance used to say, look at that little Altuve go, and we had the little finger pistol things going. We were making fun of Uncle Drayton, and that dude turned himself into a baller. He had those couple of 3, 4, 5 years in a row of 200 hits. But what has been so amazing to me has been to watch him now become a 25 to 30 bomb guy, change his game because OPS is the big thing now, and Jose Altuve is a top 10 OPS guy now. It's amazing to me.
Yeah, it really is.
And then lastly, yes, sir.
No, go ahead.
And then lastly, man, and I know you guys are up against it. I got Yordan, and I had to still say something about Yordan Alvarez. I'm an old baseballer myself. I was a college baseball player. I won't get into the whole Mississippi and Mississippi State being the last state in the last, like, 50 years with teams from the same state have won the college baseball championship. I won't get into that. But anyway, Yordan, watching that dude hit, man, he just destroys the baseball, dude. He is the best hitter in baseball right now. He is feared. Last year I want to see him bounce back because last year the Braves with those left-handed starters that they have, the Braves, did a number on us there in the playoffs. So we will have to get a little bit better against left-handed bats if we do really want to win it all, I believe. But I just have to throw that in there. Man, thank you guys so much for letting me have a little run. I just appreciate all that you guys have done for me for these last 25.
Thank you, Thomas. Appreciate it, man.
Getting to his conversation about Jose Altuve. You know, it's interesting to see Altuve. His first, when he came up, it was just kind of a sideshow, and the Astros were definitely on the decline. And Altuve put in some good work when the Astros were completely irrelevant. 167 hits, 177 hits in 2012 and 2013. And then in 14, another losing season, it was his first 225-hit game. He led the league in hitting at 341 on a bad team. Led the league with hits with 225 and stolen bases with 56, John. You remember there was a time where Altuve was stealing bases. He had 6 straight years of 30 stolen bases or more, 33, 35, 56, 38, 30 and 32, and then after that it fell to 17 stolen bases in 2018. But Jose Altuve, you know, he's on pace. He's going to hit his first double-digit stolen base year since 2018. He's going to get it this year. And what Thomas mentioned about the home runs is, you know, this is not one of these conversations to have about cheating, about PEDs. His home run totals are not crazy for his bat quickness, for his bat speed. He had 15 in 2015, the first year they made the playoffs. Since then, 24, 24, 13, 31 in 2019. But he had 31 in 21, and he has 17 this year. What's happened is you're talking about a dead pull hitter who I think is really looking to drive the pitches he gets on the inner portion of the plate because he's such a great pull hitter. And he can handle fastballs. And I think as more and more pitchers have become high-velocity fastball pitchers with also curveballs, I think he's learned to – I think what he does is look for fastballs. I think that's what he's doing. I think he goes up to the plate and says, I'll look fastball, react curveball. And if he gets fastball, that dude can pound it. Mm-hmm. And that's what's happened. I think that's why his home run total has really gone up over the years is – my guess is he's changed his plate approach where he says, I'm not worried as much about strikeouts. He doesn't go the other way with the ball, like, at all anymore. It's just basically he's not trying to spoil pitches. He's trying to drive pitches. And so, you know, he's one of those guys that hasn't gotten – he doesn't necessarily hit smarter at age 32. He just knows who he is now, and he just says, I'm a pull hitter, and I'm going to look for pitches in the zone, you know, middle in, and I'm going to look to drive them. And that's what he does now, and he really has become. He went from a 56 stolen base guy to a 31 home run guy. That's really incredible. Craig Biggio did some of the same things, but not at this level, not with this home run pop, not with that level of speed. Like, Altuve's doing everything that Biggio did, only faster and more explosively.
Yeah, no, this has been a fantastic resurgence. A fantastic resurgence.
Was it even a resurgence?
Yes, because I think, well,
I mean, 298, the COVID year.
The conversation
year,
the conversation earlier this year was, oh my goodness, is Altuve, is he
the
same guy?
But that's not a resurgence.
Guy?
That's a narrative that created by people arguing on the radio. The reality is Jose Altuve hit 278 last year. Is it a resurgence from that?
I think he's hitting 300 this year. I think he's going to hit 300.
Yeah, he's 277 right now. I still don't think he's getting to 300.
23 points
and
on the back.
And he hasn't hit 300 since 2018.
So?
But with that said, he's come from way behind. Like, Jose, we're still waiting for Yuli to get up to 250. Well, I'm just saying the odds are definitely against him. You say so, but you're an over player.
Yeah.
You play the over
on
everything.
I'm going to bet on Altuve. I'm going to bet on Altuve to hit 300. Okay, 290? You don't? He can
nah,
hit.
I'd say under.
I'm going over.
I'd say under that. I mean, he hasn't done that.
You went over on this segment. I know that. Okay. 9:47, you want to cut into News of the Weird? Brought to you by Simple Seats?
You get me in trouble with News of the Weird all the time. You ask me questions that you shouldn't ask me. You need to start asking RJ those questions.
RJ don't want any part of News of the Weird. He wants him.
He's looking backwards like,
which RJ?
Me?
That RJ? No. He don't want no part of it. But he, RJ, a little tequila? Is that what you're looking for?
Ooh, if you do want some. I've got some in the refrigerator in my office. I've got, yesterday we had Maestro Dopel. I taped a video cast with the guys at Under the Influencer, and we had a Paloma. Paloma is one of the tequila-based cocktails that you can have. It's really simple with grapefruit juice. We used the Maestro Dopel Silver that they have. The bottle was already three-quarters gone. They were using a bottle that they had from their office. But it makes great cocktails. Great cocktails. Maestro Dopel is going to make a big difference in your margaritas. If you're looking for smoky margaritas, they've got the Humito, which is a smoky silver. But if you're somebody who loves sipping tequila, which is really something that brings a lot of people a lot of joy, then you need to find a really good tequila. But if you want to find a great tequila without paying ridiculous price points, might I suggest my friends over at Maestro Dopel, 11 generations of tequila makers, are hooking you up with great tequila, whether it's the Cristalino, whether it's Añejo, the Añejo Extra. They've got you covered. I promise you that. Wherever fine liquors are sold, up your tequila game with Maestro Dopel.
This is Nolan Ryan, and you're listening to The Bench with John and Lance on ESPN 97.5. A couple knuckleheads, if you ask me.
Isn't it weird?
This is so weird.
Time now for News of the Weird on the Bench.
Boy, what the hell's wrong with you?
Here's John Granato and Lance Zierlein.
All right. News of the Weird brought to you by Simple Seats. Better prices, no fees. It is that simple. Lance, let me ask you this question.
Hey, when it starts like this. No, I wouldn't want that to happen to me. No, I wouldn't want to do that. No, I do not condone that. Do those cover this? Whatever this is going
to
be?
Would you like to go to a website that it here's what it states. Meet thousands of lonely Ukrainian women. Forget about loneliness. Let yourself be happy. Do you think that's in poor taste just a little bit? Why do you think those Ukrainian women are lonely?
Well, because they're refugees.
Their husbands have been killed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Who said this is a site saying that?
This is a website. And it's kind of, and it's been in poor taste. It's actually, it's banned for being, it's actually been banned.
Yeah.
For being offensive.
Yeah.
It is a.
I also don't think they're actually going to deliver on that anyway. It sounds like a trick.
Yeah. Well, there's always been, hey, well, did you see as soon as the war broke out, will you help me? All the Ukrainian women,
I saw it.
Good stuff. That was really good stuff. Philippines mayor has ordered government workers to smile or else. Do you think that you should be imprisoned because you don't smile on your job?
Yeah, let's try that.
Yeah.
Let's see if it helps the work get done at a more efficient rate. Maybe people will be happy at work if they're forced to smile or go to prison.
Well, in Australia, get this. Was dismissed for not using a smiley emoji in a text message. Do you think if you don't use a smiley emoji that you should be fired from your job?
No, I'm not really a text emoji guy.
I'm not an emoji guy either. I'm not 12 years old. I'm not a 12-year-old girl, so I don't use emojis.
You don't?
Ever. Ever.
Yeah, I've never seen you with one.
I don't do thumbs. I just say okay or good or cool.
I do this. When somebody says something I like, I'll do this.
Oh, you do dab. You do.
I'll send Bill Gates dabbing.
I send GIFs, but I don't send emojis. Because, I'm no longer a 12-year-old girl.
But are you a 12-year-old boy?
Nope. None of it, neither.
What is a GIF? Why are we allowed to sell GIFs and not emojis?
Because
I'm with you. I'm not an I'm more of a GIF guy, and it's mostly just Bill Gates dabbing. It's pretty much my go-to.
Yeah.
Or the little white kid who goes like this in the line of four black kids who do the dab. And there's some guy who knows how it's going to play out. So he goes, hey, guys, let's do the dab thing again. And he's recording it.
And the white kid doesn't look good. A man is dead. And you know what? He's a man after my own heart. He died right after he drank an entire Jägermeister bottle in 2 minutes.
He died
on the spot.
I've seen people do that thing where they chug. What? He died?
He was dared to down it for about $12. And dead.
How old was this person?
This person is a South African man. It doesn't say how old he was.
Okay. Do you have a picture of him?
I do not have a picture of him. I just have a bottle of Jägermeister.
Wouldn't it?
I would suggest this. Do not drink a bottle of Jägermeister in 2 minutes.
I drank it over 2 hours when everyone was giving me bull blasters. Back at that, and I almost died.
I almost died, too.
Well,
because of the Red Bull in it, I woke up in the middle of the night. My heart was going 1,000 miles
Red
an
Bull,
hour.
Bull blasters.
Yeah.
Then I laid down outside and took my shirt off and ate a sandwich.
That's where the bull
comes from.
And
ate a burger just like, that's right. That's where the bull. The blasters clearly
is the Jägermeister.
Oh.
Right. All right, we're done. Vanessa and Gallant are next right here on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Y'all have a great day. We'll talk to you again tomorrow. And watch. Have a big day because we're going to talk about the Open Championship, so make sure you watch every shot. I want to talk right now about Absolute Marble and Granite. I want to talk about Jeff Aronoff changing your home, changing your life. Here's why he can change your life. He did that for us. He changed our life in that we got a lot more money from our home because of the outdoor kitchen that he put in for us. Do you need an outdoor kitchen? You probably do. And Jeff Aronoff can build that for you, whatever your surroundings are. We had a little opening. And listen, He put in the place where you put the garbage can. He put in the place where he cut out the countertop so that the grills would fit in perfectly. He made our table for us. It turned out perfect. He walked into the backyard and said, "Oh, I'll do this, 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 and this," and bing, 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 and it was done. And that's the kind of workmanship that you get from Jeff Aronoff. If you're looking for that kind of workmanship, if you're looking for a way to improve the value of your home or business, just give him a call. 713-880-2822. 713-880-2822. It's absolute marble and granite.
This is Ed Tuttle Jones, and you're listening to ESPN 97.5.